Okay, Exodus chapter 11. We are in the middle, or kind of towards the end of this series of plagues. These plagues that God through Moses and Aaron have used to afflict Egypt in an effort to show Pharaoh and the people who he is, who God is, and to ultimately convince Pharaoh that he needs to let the people go back, or go to leave the land, to exit the land and go into Canaan. We have made it through 9 plagues, and Pharaoh will not allow the people to leave. Every time a plague, God afflicts the land with a plague, Pharaoh's heart is hardened, and he refuses to let the people go. It's been, I think, very accurately pointed out that these plagues are, they just continue to increase in intensity and in destruction, and we're going to tonight see basically the grand finale of those plagues. This is going to be the big one, where Pharaoh will finally be convinced to allow the people to leave. So let's tackle chapter 11. Would somebody read just the entire chapter 11, verses 1 through 10?
The Lord said to Moses, "One more plague I will bring on Pharaoh and on Egypt. After that, he will let you go from here. When he lets you go, he will surely drive you out. Speak now in the hearing of the people, that each man ask from his neighbor, and each woman from her neighbor, for articles of silver and articles of gold." The Lord gave the people favor in the sight of the Egyptians. Furthermore, the man Moses himself was greatly esteemed in the land of Egypt, both in the sight of Pharaoh's servants and in the sight of the people. Moses said, "Thus says the Lord, about midnight, I'm going about in the midst of Egypt, and all the firstborn in the land of Egypt shall die, from the firstborn of the Pharaoh who sits on his throne, even to the firstborn of the slave girl who is behind the millstones, all of the firstborn of the cattle as well. Moreover, there shall be a great cry in all the land of Egypt, such as there has not been before, and such as shall never be again. But against any of the sons of Israel, a dog will not even bark, whether against man or beast, that you may understand how the Lord makes a distinction between Egypt and Israel. All these your servants will come down to me and bow themselves before me, saying, 'Go out, you and all the people who follow you, and after that I will go out.' And he went out from Pharaoh in hot anger. Then the Lord said to Moses, 'Pharaoh will not listen to you, so that my wonders will be multiplied in the land of Egypt.' Moses and Aaron performed all these wonders before Pharaoh, yet the Lord hardened Pharaoh's heart, and he did not let the sons of Israel go
out." Okay, in verse 1, God says to Moses, one more plague, but this one was going to be different, because after this one, God will finally relent, or Pharaoh will finally relent, and let the people go. But he's going to do more than just let the people go. He is going to drive them out. This is finally going to convince them to not just let them go, but he is going to drive them out. The people are going, the Israelites are going to ask their fellow Egyptians for clothing and for articles of gold. And the Egyptians are going to do that. They are going to just give those things to the Israelites. It's almost as if they're going to pay the Israelites to leave the land. Moses himself is going to be highly esteemed in the eyes of Pharaoh's servants and of the people. And then Moses said, this is what God is going to do. About midnight, He is going to go into the land of Egypt, and God is going to make a personal visit to the Egyptians, and he is going to kill all of the firstborn in the land of Egypt. Exactly what's going to be the, what sects of society are going to be affected by this plague? Yeah, God is not going to have, is not going to be a respecter of persons when it comes to this final plague. From the firstborn of Pharaoh all the way down to the firstborn of the lowliest slave girl and everybody in between, the firstborn of their homes are going to be killed. And it's going to be devastating. You can you can understand to whatever limits or whatever ways we can understand this, how devastating this would be, because it says there's going to be a cry from Egypt that is going to be like nothing that has ever been done before. It's going to be unlike anything else. This is going to be just terrible and horrible. Terry?
One of the things I think about this, because this time I thought about it, hadn't before, I was looking at the old, I'm talking about old people. There may have been people ready to die who were first, they're going to be gone as well. And we're talking about the babies as well and all of this. And there wouldn't be a, that would affect entire, every household. It would be impossible in that situation to not have a single household that was not affected by death and maybe even multiples of death in some form or other.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if that would include, you know, if there was a household, you know, if that included adults, but it very may well have. I'm not sure about that, but that could have been a possibility. But, I mean, but you're right. It's just, matter of fact, it would go on later to say that, you know, every household was impacted. Jack?
The beginning of this book started with a great cry from the people.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great observation, Terry.
Something else I failed to think about. There are people here in Israel now who believe already, I'm talking about believe in the God of the Israelites, and would and have, well, they left with them, leave, a bunch of them are going to leave with them, but they believe in her already, and they're still going to be affected by this because there's no blood over the doorpost.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's it's just going to be, it's just going to be devastating. But that's what's going to happen to the Egyptians. How about, what does it say about the Israelites?
They would be spared so long as they followed God's instructions.
Yeah, and such a distinction would be made that, you know, God is going to come and, through his agent, is going to come and destroy these firstborn. And you, the cry is going to be horrible. Yet among the sons of Israel, verse 7, not even a dog will bark against man or beast. And so again, another indication here of the distinction made, that God has made between the Egyptians and the Israelites. Chad?
Think about in Esther where Haman wanted to be paraded about the streets and ended up being Mordecai, but how they were paraded about the streets and everyone were to get, was to give them honor.
Yeah.
Almost imagine like when Mordecai or Haman would walk by and over that.
Yeah.
Like the people with dogs, they close their mouths and the dogs would bark. And because that would be a dishonor to the person walking by, and that's how the Israelites were treated at this point in time. And they were honored in such a way that dogs would be barking.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, God's able to kind of go in there and do all of this and yet not even disturb, not even wake up even one Israelite. You know, that's. For those of them that, you know, I don't know how many went to sleep that night, but it's just, that to me is one of the most amazing things about these plagues, is that God is able to distinguish between the Egyptians and the Israelites in a very, you know, miraculous way.
Should we get a picture of the church today in this? I mean, God makes a distinction between his people and those that are not his people.
Certainly.
And God's blessings and his promises and his favor and everything is showered upon his people.
Yeah.
And not the unbelievers.
Right.
And, you know, if we Pharaoh tried to make compromises with Moses.
Right.
Indirectly with God.
Yeah.
You know, what about if I do this? What about if I do that? No, you have to do it exactly like I say.
Right.
Or it won't be acceptable.
Right. Yeah, I mean, we don't need to worry about, you know, God kind of overlooking us if we've been, right, you know, faithful to him, you know, that we're going to be missed. No, God knows who the righteous are, and he knows who the unrighteous are. Jared.
I'm trying to make sure I understand this correctly. When we left off in the end of chapter 10, Moses is in front of Pharaoh. He says, you have spoken well, I'll never see your face again. And as you start in verse 1 of 11, the Lord talked to Moses, but at the end of 11, verse 8, then he went out from Pharaoh in great anger.
Yeah.
So has he been in Pharaoh's presence this whole time? Is Pharaoh made aware of what has been said here? Do we get any indication of that?
The only thing I am pretty certain of is that 11 may not follow, may not be chronologically, you know, right after 10. You know, maybe some of this was before what you read at the end of 10. Now, I got a little kind of mixed up as far as, you know, the Lord is talking to Moses, and then all of a sudden you got Pharaoh there. I'm not sure, but I'm what he says in that little exchange at the end of 10, some of this in 11 may have been before that. But beyond that, I'm not sure.
Because we're aware of, Moses made Pharaoh aware of some of the plagues before they happened.
Yeah.
Just wondering if he had any insight into this final, the final plague, as far as a
warning of Pharaoh, or Moses warning Pharaoh.
Yeah.
Well, I'm wondering beginning in verse 4, if that's him warning Pharaoh. Because then he, in verse 8, all these your servants will come and bow down to me and bow themselves before me, saying, go out, you and all the people will follow you, and after that I will go out. So I think beginning in verse 4, it's Moses warning Pharaoh.
In verse 2, it says, speak now in the hearing of the people.
Yeah, I think he's telling the people. I think Moses there in verse 2 is being told to go and give instructions to the people as far as, you know, asking the articles of silver or gold and the clothing from the Egyptians that they would eventually take with them. And then beginning in verse 4, this is how I'm making sense of it. Beginning in verse 4, he then addresses Pharaoh. Skip.
Something is similar in Genesis 1 and 2. A lot of people read those two chapters and think chapter 2 is another creation of some sort.
Right.
But chapter 2 just gives some detail of what was in chapter 1. This is similar to that.
Yeah.
You've got chapter 10 and this discussion, and then in the midst of that discussion, you've got the specifics of what's going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. So it is the way it reads. You know, we want to make everything, you know, sequential. I'm just not sure we can do that. Do that here. And we see at the end of chapter 10, Moses and Aaron performed the wonders before Pharaoh, and yet again, Pharaoh's heart was hardened by God, and he did not let the sons of Israel go out of the land. So, you know, just like before, Pharaoh's heart was hardened and he refused to let the Israelites go. He will, but not until after this final plague is afflicted on the people. Okay. Anything else about chapter 11?
Mm-hmm. Christ is the firstborn of God.
Yeah.
And then we see that the Egyptians are told that they will bow down to the Israelites. And Philippians 2 talks about that every knee and every tongue shall confess that Jesus Christ is the Lord.
Yeah, good point. Good point. Anything else on chapter 11? Okay, let's get into chapter 12. Chapter 12 deals with some instructions regarding the Passover lamb and how it was to be sacrificed. And then from this moment on, generation after generation, every year, they were going to or supposed to celebrate the Feast of Unleavened Bread. And there's some details regarding that that are mentioned here. So some kind of tedious instructions, but I think there's a lot here, if we'll really pay attention, a lot of lessons we can learn here and that we can apply to ourselves even yet today. So he goes into the starts talking about the Passover lamb and how that process was supposed to go about. So let's read verses 1 through 13.
The Lord said to Moses and Aaron in the land of Egypt, "This month shall be for you the beginning of months. It shall be the first month of the year for you. Tell all the congregation of Israel that on the earth, on the 10th day of this month, every man shall take a lamb, according to their father's houses, a lamb for a household. And if the household is too small for a lamb, then he and his nearest neighbor, shall take according to the number of persons, according to what each can eat. You shall make your count for the lamb. Your lamb shall be without blemish, a male, a year old. You may take it from the sheep or from the goats, and you shall keep it until the 14th day of this month. And when the whole assembly of the congregation of Israel shall kill this lamb at twilight, then they shall take some of the blood and put it on the doorposts, on the two doorposts, and on the lintel of the houses in which they eat it. And they shall eat the flesh that night, roasted on fire, with unleavened bread and bitter herbs they shall eat it. Do not eat any of it raw or boiled in water, but roasted, its head and its legs and its inner parts. And you shall let none of it remain until the morning. Anything that remains until the morning you shall burn. In this manner you shall eat it, with your belt fastened, with your sandals on your feet, and with your staff in your hand. And you shall eat it in haste. It is the Lord's Passover. For I will pass through the land of Egypt that night, and I will strike all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, both man and beast. And on all the gods of Egypt I will execute judgment. I am the Lord. And the blood shall be a sign for you on those houses where you are. And when I see the blood, I will pass over you, and no plague will befall you to destroy you when I strike the land of Egypt."
Okay, in verse 2, this may seem like not that big of a deal, but it really indicates how important the Exodus and the Passover celebration was going to be from here on out. This month was going to be the beginning of months for you. It was going to be their new year. This was such an important event that their entire calendar was going to be based on the occasion of the Exodus. Every time they would, you know, flip their calendar, they would be reminded that, wow, this is a year from, you know, or this in this very month was when God delivered his people from Egypt. He gives instructions here about the Passover lamb. And so on the 10th of the month, they were to basically pick out their lamb and then just keep it. And then on the 14th, then it was to be slaughtered at twilight. So 4 or 5 days there, they were to keep it. So this was not something that they... this was something that they had planned. This is something that they gave some thought to. That it's not something they did at the last minute. This was to be done by each household. Each household was to slaughter their own lamb. Now, there were provisions given if you had a family that was small and You weren't going to eat an entire lamb. There were provisions given for the combination, you know, of a couple of small families. But by and large, this was to be done household by household. Now, this Passover lamb, what were the requirements of it? What was this lamb to be like?
1 year old.
1 year old. Male. Yeah, without blemish. It could be of the sheep, or it could, or it can come from the goats. But a male lamb, unblemished, a year old, for the sheep, or from the goats. So then, on the evening of the 14th, and so understand that their way of keeping time is unlike ours, in the sense that their next day started at sunset. So the evening of the 14th, then the Passover lamb was to be slaughtered, and they are to eat it that night with unleavened bread and bitter herbs. What was, if you think about some of the details that are given here, in what manner was this to be eaten? What is the overall kind of attitude of the people as they ate this? Attitude may not be a good word, but the overall feeling as they ate this, Chad?
Well, it doesn't look like a gourmet meal. You know, it wasn't like a multi-step process. It was warm it up as much as you can to cook it thoroughly, and there's no time for the bread to rise. And these herbs you can have with it, and it was like, it's done in haste. Like, there wasn't much time allotted for this meal.
Yeah, this is kind of a hurried up process. And a bunch of these details indicate that. The unleavened bread, that, you know, if you, ladies, if you make bread, you know, you typically make it with some yeast, and I don't know if I've ever done that before, but, you know, it's a process. You don't just throw dough together and, you know, and have it rise. It is done in a matter of minutes. It is a process. But they didn't have time for that. It was to be roasted and not boiled, and so that would be a quicker thing. What about their clothing? What do we see here that would indicate that, you know, this is to be done in haste?
They're prepared to run.
Yeah, they've got their sandals on. They've got their loins girded. What did they have in their hand? Yeah, I'm guessing, you know, a staff is kind of an outside type of tool. You know, a herd sheep, and maybe protection could be a weapon, I guess. It's not something you would wield inside of a house typically, but they got to be ready to go. And why must they be ready to go? Where are they going?
They're leaving Egypt.
Yeah, they're leaving Egypt, and they need to be ready to go at a moment's notice. Skip.
So they went so quickly, they didn't even dress this lamb. The head was still on, the lentils were
right.
Still there.
Yeah. So this was another, you know, more evidence here of, you know, this. They didn't waste any time, Terry. And then, yeah.
One of the things that I noticed in there, I don't know if you've taken a look at hyssop. Hyssop is something that really would paint well. You wouldn't use it, even though you did a bunch of that. But what's interesting about hyssop? Hyssop was an antiseptic, and so when you think about that in comparison to us. This antiseptic put the blood on, and that's the same thing that applies for us today.
Yeah.
It was just stuff like that's really amazing to me. You know, I was thinking, why would you paint something with hyssop looking, you know, it's like, because it wouldn't paint well.
Right.
But, so we're just smearing blood on, but it was an antiseptic.
Right. I didn't know that. The hyssop there was what, you know, what was used to administer the blood on the doorpost and on the lintel.
Something else that really strikes me about this lamb is they had to keep this young animal for 4 days. And just the way I grew up living on a farm and the little kids get attached to the young animal running around, and you've got to feed this thing and take care of it for a few days. You know, you can't help it. Oh, look at the little cute thing. It gets you attached, and when you have to kill this thing, it should mean more to you than just killing some strange animal, which, again, should give us something to think about in our time today, too.
Yeah, I wonder if that was one of the reasons they were to keep it for a few days, because you're right. It's much easier to kill an animal that you're not attached to. But here, it would have been enough time to get some acquaintance with that animal, and just shows you the sacrifice that is being made possible.
I think along with that, it also shows faith, because that would be a time that you would maybe contemplate, well, that's my best land, that's the land without blemish, and start to have doubts in what you're doing, and will God provide another best land for
me? Right.
All of those things could enter into somebody's mind as we contemplate a sacrifice. It could be what we do in our giving and our preparation for returning to the Lord when he's blessed us with. We could have doubts over that period of time.
Right.
Oh, do I really put that into the basket or anything in that manner? We could contemplate the longer that God makes us wait for something to happen.
Mm-hmm. Good point.
One thing that they could help me with on this is I'm not sure after this point that they ate lamb again after this time period. I think that was it. When they come back in Ezra 6, when they came back and they're rebuilding the walls, when they did this, the lamb was offered as a sacrifice, and he talks about most of the time, that the 10th day is not mentioned. He picks it up from the 14th, even in maybe this one here. I'm not sure that he talks about the lamb again in here. But from the 14th day almost a day, they observed unleavened bread. And I haven't found a scripture, and you can take a look, just help me out on that, that really indicated that they ate the lamb like they did here on this occasion on those after that. I know that midway through here that it had ceased. And I know that the Jewish history ceased. They weren't doing it all the time. And so it was kind of a puzzle to me. So I'm just, that was interesting, and maybe just take a look at that and see if we can.
So what about other Passovers, though?
That's what I'm saying. Other Passovers, take a look at it. He picks up from the 14th. He doesn't mention getting a lamb even on this one here. He mentions that on this occasion, get a lamb and do that. But the unleavened bread started on the 14th and went through the 21st. But I don't find, especially even in Ezra, when they come back, they didn't eat that lamb like they did on this occasion.
Certainly they didn't. I know there's a period of time where they didn't do it. Some are not even sure if they did it during their 40 years of wandering. And then with Hezekiah and Josiah, it seems to be that there was a break. Now, the fact that they didn't do it at all, I don't know about that.
It's a mystery. I mean, there's stuff like that. I just take a look and see what you're lying for.
Awesome.
I don't know that this is a good point of that, but we see Samuel's sons putting their forks into the pot and pulling out the lamb that was prepared.
So yeah.
That was a meal that was given to them as a portion, and like I said, they abused it. But certainly the others before that, I think, they had the right to eat a portion of that offering.
Yeah. Okay. And so the blood of this lamb, this is obviously very important. They were to collect that blood in a basin, and then with the hyssop, then they were to apply that blood basically kind of to the framework of the door, to the doorpost and to the lintel. And this was to be a sign to the Lord as he would pass over Egypt. He would destroy the firstborn of every house that did not have this applied to the door. But every house that had this applied to, the Lord would pass over. Verse 12 is very key. For I will go through the land of Egypt on that night and will strike down all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, both man and beasts, and against all the gods of Egypt, I will execute judgments. I am the Lord. And so this was not only a judgment against Egypt and against Pharaoh, but it's against the very gods of Egypt. Fictional as they may be, they were real in the eyes of the Egyptians. And there was a god of the Nile, and there was a god of all of these things that God executed his plagues against, according to Egypt, according to the people of Egypt. And God is now pronouncing judgment with these plagues against the gods of Egypt. All being done to show that God is the only God. He is the Lord. He is Jehovah God. And so these were the instructions for the Passover lamb. These were the instructions of what to do with the blood, and how when God saw that blood, he would pass over those houses. Think about the application to us today. You know, we need the blood of Jesus, and if the blood of Jesus has not been applied to us, then we risk a certain judgment, just as the Egyptians would eventually face, because the blood of the lamb was not applied to their doors. Questions, thoughts, comments about what we have discussed through verse 13. Awesome.
You see an indication of the people's transformation here too. So 40 years prior, the Israelites are asking Moses, who made you a prince or a judge over us? And here at the end of verse 27, the people bow their heads in worship. Certainly they're not worshiping Moses, but there is a repentance on their heart as well as to, yes, God is with us, and God hasn't forsaken us or forgotten us. He truly has heard our cry, and so they are worshiping the Lord because of his promises coming true.
Yeah, yeah. We see some good things from the Israelites. We don't see a lot of good about the Israelites' exodus all the way, from here on out, but we do see that faith. We do see them obeying the Lord and doing just as he had commanded, so that's positive. Rachel? It's an act of faith on their part, and it seems by and large they did that, and they had faith. So, yeah, it speaks very well of them. God made it very clear who he was and what he was about. Beginning then in verses 14 through 20, I don't think we'll take the time to read that. In these verses are God's instructions regarding the Feast of Unleavened Bread. This is a feast that from this point on was to be observed by the Israelites, year after year. And it came on the heels of the Passover. So for 7 days, they were to observe this feast. Beginning on the 14th day, so the Passover lamb was sacrificed, and that feast was observed the night, that evening. And so then the next day, of course, we're still on the 14th day of the month because of the way they kept time. All for the next 7 days, they were to observe this feast. There was a convocation and assembly on the first and the last days of that. There was not to be any work done on those days. And what were they not allowed to eat that entire time?
Leaven.
Yeah, there was to be no leaven to be consumed by the Israelites during this entire time. What does God say about the leaven and their proximity to leaven during that entire week?
Not to be
Yeah, God really serious about this. It's not to be found even there to get rid of it. It's to be out of the house for an entire week. And so they were to eat unleavened bread that that week. And the consequences for not doing this, not following God's instructions, were rather severe. They were to be cut off from Israel. Terry? Good point. And so 7 days this is to be observed, and they're not to eat anything leavened. That is repeated, I think, three times during these verses here. And so those are the instructions regarding the Feast of Unleavened Bread. I feel like I'm missing something here. And this is to be observed in from then on, from generation to generation, they are to observe this feast. Again, you know, remembering what God has done for them in this great deliverance. And then I want to skip down to verse 25. Verse 24, "And you shall observe this event as an ordinance for you and your children forever. When you enter the land which the Lord will give you, as he has promised, you shall observe this rite. And when your children say to you, 'What does this rite mean to you?' you shall say, 'It is a Passover sacrifice to the Lord, who passed over the houses of the sons of Israel in Egypt when he smote the Egyptians, but spared our homes.' And the people bowed low and worshiped." And so there was going to be one exodus. God was not going to repeat this year after year to demonstrate to those who weren't aware of what God had done before. But what was going to happen year after year was they were going to observe this Passover feast. They were going to observe this feast of unleavened bread. And what undoubtedly was going to happen was the children were going to ask the parents, "What does this mean to you?" And the parents then were to give instruction regarding that. The Old Testament, in several different places, it is emphasized the role of parents teaching their children about what God has done for his people. Deuteronomy 6, Joshua chapter 4, you know, emphasis is placed on the parents teaching their children. And just want to emphasize that to those of us that are parents that still have children at home, this the need for us to do that, even yet today, reminding and teaching our children about the great things God has done, so that we can impress upon them how great our Lord is. So just an important verse or set of verses here regarding our need to teach our children. Thoughts, comments about any of that? Okay.
Jason.
Brandon.
So, you know, like the unleavened bread, you know, it's used so much in the Bible. It's always used around sin. It's never a good thing.
Yeah.
So I know we talked about it being a paste, but also it's you're adding to. And so not only was it just being tasteful, it's something you're adding to it. It's all fermented. You know, when we talk about when Jesus does the unleavened bread, it's he says he's the bread of life.
Right. 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 Yeah. Unleavened is often you know, associated with sin. That's a great point, and our need to get rid of the leaven from our lives and to be as pure as we can be. It's a great point. And so, just several things to learn from these verses. You know, our need to teach our children. You know, these plagues are ultimately a demonstration of who God is. And it's something we need to focus on, is how great our God is that we serve. He is the Lord of Lords. He's the God of Gods. He's the King of Kings. And he has demonstrated that time and time and time again. And we need to remember that.
It says that real far along. When you look at, he didn't put a man on the throne. And I wondered about the succession of the kings and the pharaohs. You know, that had, you know, sometimes we see this picture of the eldest son. He didn't put a firstborn son on the throne in Egypt this time either. Just look at his plan and his thinking ahead. Here's somebody who was going to be on there. Even when he presented that death on the firstborn, Pharaoh was still going to be on this throne. Mm-hmm. And he's going to accomplish what he set out to do through Pharaoh.
Yeah. The fulfillment of God's purposes and plans is just incredible. You think about the promises made to Abraham, and you know, 600 or so years before this, and they're being fulfilled. We see that in the Exodus, and the 600,000 men plus all the children, everybody else that went along with that. Started out with 70, now we're up, you know, probably realistically, you know, over 1 million people. And what did God promise to Abraham so many centuries before? That he was going to multiply his seed. And at that point, it didn't look pretty unlikely that, you know, Abraham didn't have Sarah, and that was it, and he was an old man. And now look. And so just God's promises and his plan and his foreknowledge and what he says happened exactly to a T. He was able to predict all of these things as they happened. It's just incredible. And was certainly had impacted them during the time of Exodus, and certainly has an impact on us as well. So, Evan.
Going back to what Terry was asking earlier about them not eating of the lamb, in Numbers 9, well, let me back up here at the, what is it, 24, you shall observe this event as an ordinance for you and your children forever. And again in 25 at the end, you shall observe this rite.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then if you go to Numbers 9, and it's the section where the men have become unclean because they have contacted their body, and they wanted to observe the Passover, and Moses asked the Lord, and Lord said, well, you keep it just the way it's supposed to, except on the second one. And it actually goes in and lists that you're to eat it. And so whether the children of Israel or not did that, it would appear to me that it was the Lord's intention that they would do this exact same way every year, year in, year out, to remind them of what happened.
Did it mention lamb in there and the
eating? Yes. It does.
Okay, we'll pick up in chapter 12. Somewhere in chapter 12 on Sunday.